And this is KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Thursday morning, April 16th. Currently 40 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Definitely a few clouds out there. Heber City reporting 45 degrees also with some clouds. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we move throughout the day, we've got some changes on the way. Mild conditions this morning quickly disappear as we go into the day as cold air moves in behind a cold front. That will also bring a period of snow shower activity moving through the area, both in Park City and into the Heber Valley. As we get throughout your, let's say, we'll call it midday time frame into the early afternoon hours. Now, while we will see that snow chance continuing out there for us today, looks like the duration and the amount of snow has definitely been cut down due to the speed of this front moving on through. Instead of the front slowing down across the state, it's going to continue to move farther to the south, and that's going to mean a quick end to the chance of wintry weather. With that being said, there's still a chance of seeing some light accumulations anywhere from up to 1 to 4 inches around the Park City area. In the Heber Valley, we're probably talking more like a trace to maybe up to 1 or 2 inches of snowfall. But again, it's not going to last long enough to create any major issues, but just more of a talker out there for us. High temperatures will be in the upper 40s to near 50 in Park City this morning, with temperatures in the mid 50s in the Heber Valley. But look for those temperatures to fall as we go throughout the midday and afternoon hours down into the upper 20s and lower 30s. Now, by the time we go towards tonight, we'll start to dry things out for the most part. A few scattered snow showers may stick around across the higher elevations. Temperatures dipping down into the teens for your Friday morning, with highs only in the upper 30s in Park City for your Friday afternoon, and only in the mid 40s in the Heber Valley. The good news is, as we move into the weekend, another frigid start for your Saturday morning with temperatures down into the teens, but we're warming up into the 50s in Park City on Saturday, near 60 in the Heber Valley. We'll be in the mid 60s on Sunday in Park City with partly sunny skies. Temperatures warm to near 70 in the Heber Valley, with again partly sunny skies, and even warmer weather arrives heading into early next week. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. In a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Summit County Council Chair Candace Hart, recapping yesterday's county council meeting. Park City Mayor Ryan Dickey stopping by, talk a little bit about his first 100 days in the office. And from the Heber Valley Chamber, Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner with a preview of some upcoming events. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio, from new moon craters to new colors of the moon. The senior space editor for Scientific American, Lee Billings, is one of the guests, talking a little bit about the retrospective of the Artemis II mission. Then physicist Vedant Bosu and Karsten Rote from the University of Utah go beneath the Antarctic ice to explore the next phase of the Ice Cube Neutrino Observatory and the hunt for elusive cosmic neutrinos. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, heard, of course, every Thursday from 9 to 10. Let's take a look at some local news. The Heber City Council voted to extend City Manager Matt Brower's contracts for 3 more years in a 4-2 vote Tuesday night. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more from the emotionally charged special meeting.
Renewing Heber City Manager Matt Brower's contract was originally slated for a 5-minute discussion and vote April 7th. Instead, there was a week-long delay, an hours-long closed session, a special meeting, and dozens of public comments before the April 14th vote to keep Brower in the role he's occupied since 2018. An increasingly frustrated crowd waited until after 9 p.m. for the public portion of the meeting to begin. By that point, the council had been privately reviewing Brower's performance for 3 hours. Over 100 residents attended, about half of them in person. As their patience waned, some stomped on the floor to tell the council downstairs they were unhappy with the delays. At a meeting last week, the council heard extensive public comment about Brower's performance, mostly positive. Council members allowed 15 minutes of comment Tuesday. Those who spoke were mostly unhappy with Brower's leadership and the overall direction of the city. Brower listened intently to the comments, taking notes with a slightly furrowed brow. Heidi Harmon said she wants a city manager who supports open space and slow living.
Everyone who moved here for a reason, and it isn't to live in Salt Lake City or Provo or Park City.
One-time mayoral candidate Mike Hewlett said there should be a term limit on Brower's leadership.
You're in an abusive relationship with Matt Brower. It's not going to change. He's not going to stop. You need to just move on.
Cy Hutt spoke in support of the city manager, calling him a man of integrity.
When I've agreed with him or disagreed with him, I always knew that he's a straight shooter.
Councilmember Aaron Sheetwood estimated people also submitted about 160 written comments over the past week. Despite Mayor Heidi Franco cautioning people to remain polite, the mood quickly got heated once it was the council's turn to deliberate. When Councilmember Mike Johnston said Brower works for the council, residents yelled, "He works for us." One man stood up and walked out when Johnston made a motion to renew the contract.
We are going to renew his contract tonight. I have made a motion.
Is that the way everybody feels out there?
Or is it just you, sir?
Thank you.
You're going to find out. Stick around and find out.
We're going to stay respectful and professional.
I move that we renew the employment contract for Matt Brower as our city manager for 3 more years using the current contract.
3 months.
For 3 more years using the current contract as shown in our staff report and at his current salary.
It was at that point in the evening that Police Chief Parker Sever stood and warned the crowd to settle down. Councilmember Yvonne Barney also scolded the rowdy residents.
When you get online and you make comments or you put videos on there that are not only harmful to the individual but to their family members, that is wrong. Stop. Please be respectful. I have more faith in you than that. Show it.
She said there had been threats made online against Brower and some council members. Franco said she was sympathetic to residents' feelings, but she couldn't hold up the vote.
I have to proceed with the motion. I have to enforce the rules, everybody. My hands are tied. I have to enforce the rules.
She and Barney voted against renewing Brower's contract. Barney said she respects Brower, but she had concerns she couldn't ignore. Neither offered specific details. Council members Aaron Sheetwood, Morgan Murdoch, and Sid Ostergaard joined Johnston and voted yes. Sheetwood said after the long performance review, the council would be more active in directing Brower going forward.
I am confident that once you understand that feedback, that you'll take it and you'll do your best to be better. And I think that's fantastic, and I look forward to that.
Franco told KBCW after the meeting she still believes the contract itself should be changed.
I was told years ago to keep my hands off of the city manager's performance evaluation, and this is what it's led to, as well as no performance evaluations in the last 3 years. And that's not the way cities are supposed to be run.
Brower will earn a base salary of $214,000. Heber City is a financial supporter of KBCW. Grace Dorfler, KBCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council met yesterday, and on the phone with a recap, I have Council Chair Candace Hart. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you doing today?
Doing well, thanks. So the council yesterday adopted an ordinance that will allow for clean energy to power Summit County homes and businesses with the Community Renewable Energy Act. Is this the last step before this program launches?
This is the last step we had to take. And then people have the option to, or I guess you could opt into the program, and they have up to, really you can opt out at any time, but you have 6 months where they could opt out and there's no charge to them. So this is the final action for the council.
All right. Before, I want to talk a little more about that opt-in, opt-out, but just step back a little bit and tell us what the Utah Renewable Communities Program is.
Well, I wish we had, you know, Roger on, because he had been working on this for so many years. But essentially what this is there's clean energy, and this allows people like ourselves to opt in to where you would be buying your energy from the clean energy specifically. And so it really just gives you an option now that you didn't have before.
All right. So a few other cities, including Colville, Oakley, Park City, and Francis, will be considering joining as well. If other local governments want to get in the program but haven't signed up, my understanding is that they can't. How come?
You know, I don't have the answer. We should have Emily on to talk about those specifics, but it's something to do with the creation of it, but I just wasn't part of that.
Okay. So back to the opt-in, opt-out, my understanding is that it was an opt-out program, so it will go into effect unless you do opt-out.
Yes, you're actually correct.
Okay, so how would somebody do that?
So there, you have 4 months where you can opt out, and there's no fee to doing so. And then after 6 months, it's $30 opt-out fee if one chooses to. But to opt out itself, I'm not sure what the mechanism is, but I think you would just notify the provider.
All right. So the cost is going to be $4 a month, or free if for a low income earner. Any idea who qualifies for that discount?
No, we didn't discuss that last night.
All right. And the rate increase for business is, my understanding, about 5% extra per month. So businesses could opt out as well if they wanted?
That is correct.
All right. My understanding is that the state legislature nearly killed the program during the legislative session. Any idea how close it was to dying before the finish line?
No, I think it was touch and go. Like, it was one of these things that we were quite nervous about and then in the end prevailed. But we're ecstatic that, you know, we've gotten across what we see as the finish line here.
Okay. Let's see. The council also adopted a new development agreement with Utah Olympic Park. This was after a lot of pushback from the Sun Peak neighborhood. What did the council compromise on?
Well, I think we tightened up a number of areas, specifically based on the feedback from the Sun Peak neighborhood, in particular the back gate. We really wanted to, as much as we could, limit the traffic that goes in and out of that gate. And so we're fairly restricted there. We required that the main access to the Olympic Park has to be Olympic Park Drive, you know, which is currently how we all get in and out of the park now. But that would be the main access, or the park would have to do everything it could to not, or to keep it that way or to not interfere. But the only real way that they can use that back gate is like for special events, if they need for safety, you know, health and like something, an accident happens up there and then you get ambulances in. You'll see access in around, like I said, special events, so things like the Olympics. But generally speaking, what we did is we really just restricted the access point there. The ridge line that goes from there and it climbs up, sort of, it's the dividing piece between the Utah Olympic Park and the neighborhood. No man-made structures can break that ridgeline of any type, unless it's a gondola that sits in a pre-existing development agreement that can go between the canyons and Pinnacle Junction. So we really just tried to keep man-made objects from encroaching on that ridgeline. We tried to restrict what happens in the gate there.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you, though, I mean, the county code, I believe, already prohibits building on ridgelines. So what did that need to do on the development agreement?
Oh, it's slightly different, though. The way the county code reads is it's to protect viewpoints. So there's a couple of areas, like along 224, and if you stand and you look at a ridgeline from those points, nothing can break a ridgeline there. This, that we put in, is more restrictive. Just from the topographical point, like if you and I were standing on that ridgeline, no man-made object can extend past that at any point, regardless of these viewpoints that exist in the code. So really, that kind of comes from something at Woodward. Woodward doesn't do that, but that was something that we realized after the fact. We should have written the language in that way for them as well, so that people on the backside don't see, say, the light poles, or if you have snowmaking equipment, and that it doesn't come back and blow over into the neighborhoods. So it's a bit different. But the other thing we were really looking at doing is really this idea of nightly rentals and short-term rentals. The language is slightly different the way they use it in the park, so we define that in the agreement. A short-term rental, the way Utah Olympic Park uses that language, is really kind of like athletes, coaches, you know, family members, and they come in and they may rent a room, almost like a nightly rental would, but it's specific to them and it's for just a few days. Where a nightly rental is, the way that definition is, that's like anybody in the world who goes online to like a VRBO type thing, you know, would rent a room. So we really limited the nightly rentals, the part where just any general person could come in and rent something. The idea that it's being used for athletes, coaches, and stuff, I think, is in the spirit of what we were looking to do. So there were some limitations in there, limitations in the ridge, limitations in the gate. We put in some language to try to keep the pool open as long as possible. But we can't really restrict that one, but, you know, the intent is there. And it turns out that the Utah Olympic Park, I think largely due to when the construction process would start, we'll be able to keep the pool open pretty much all summer, this summer, which was the point of contention. So it's a few other things, but those are the kinds of things we tightened up.
Yeah. And with this 120-room hotel, there were some concerns from council about whether that would generate ongoing revenue or just a one-time bonus for the park. So what's the status of that?
Well, they have the hotel in their development agreement, so that they're going to go forward, and at least their plan, as they stated now, is to go forward and build that. It would be a flagged hotel, which means branded. You know, like I don't know that it is a Marriott, but it'd be that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then, so they are free to generate revenue from it, and if they make money, you know, that's good for them. But remember, this is the point where they're looking for a tax, where they would basically keep the taxes from their commercial activities into the UOP, and then that hasn't happened yet, but that would be a next step if it was going to.
Okay. And how does the additional housing here at the UOP affect how you approach future conversations with Junction Commons about the proposed housing there?
Yeah, it's a great question, because in theory, you're supposed to like look at all these things in isolation and just look at it by itself. But the truth is, the big picture, you know, how do all of these things affect the traffic that we're all experiencing in Kimball Junction? So actually last night I requested a meeting with Shane and Carl from our transportation department, and Shane as our county manager, to come before the council and to give us an overall, like, separate from any development, what does traffic look like? And with all of, if any of these developments were to come into play, and we already know Dakota Pacific is, or UOP, what is the overall effect? So let's have a separate meeting that's not just project-based where it's in isolation, but let's look at the totality of all this and what the impacts are. And everybody's human, so it's hard for that not to be weighing in your mind as you're looking at a project.
Yeah. And during the Junction Commons discussion, the council talked with staff and Junction Commons developers about the traffic that the redevelopment will create. So does UDOT know this is something that's in progress?
Yes, but it's interesting when you talk to UDOT. So they know it. We talked to them about it. But the way they look at their studies, they have our transportation plan. They incorporate that information into their studies. And even when we were doing Dakota Pacific and we were trying to tell them, like, no, look, this is likely, you know, it's being forced on us by the state and it's going to end up having these impacts, getting them to actually incorporate the data is a whole other thing. It has to be, they're very, I don't know, it's like a very official process, the way these things have to come in. So you have, I guess what I'm saying is, you have conversations, you're talking about it, they acknowledge it, we're communicating, but when it functionally, when it actually gets into the study is not always right away. So they're aware of it, though, when we're talking about it.
All right. So with the Junction Commons project, I mean, how does that all going to fit in with the lane addition and improvements that are going to be happening in Kimball Junction to mitigate Dakota Pacific? Or does all of that just, you know, get undone because of the additional traffic?
Yeah, the improvements that are in the works right now will continue forward. So right now, this fall, they're supposed to work on the additional left turn lanes along 224. So right now, I guess I break it down in steps for everybody. You can see construction on 224 now. That's the bus rapid transit work. That brings you all the way up to roughly, say, the visitor center or Olympic Way. From Olympic Parkway or the Visitor Center to Highway 80, that's the section where they're going to go in this summer. They're going to add left turn lanes, so there'll be two lanes going in there. And then remember back when they originally showed us like options A, B, and C for improvements in the area, what we were asking about last night is when will we get to layer in more of the solutions that we're in, say, option A. And in particular, since we're talking about Junction Commons, that stretch of road that goes back for everyone just in front of the Walmart, you know, and the Whole Foods, there's conversation about right now it's three lanes. They count the two lanes you drive on and then the center divide. But should it have four lanes? Should it have a roundabout? These are all things to be considered now on that road.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember Tanya Hansen asked about UDOT's former plan to add an exit off of I-80 that would go onto Landmark Drive. So any chance that UDOT would consider that with the addition of the Junction Commons development?
That was what they, yeah, I mean, yes, there is a chance. What they told us when they chose option C, which is these additional turn lanes back there on 224, was that option A, which had that off-ramp or that exit at the roundabout there, was still an option, and it still could be considered. So it's the way it's not that there's a menu, but there's a list of improvements they had. And what UDOT has said is they can come in and add any one of those at any time. They can get it on the stip and through. So when will it happen would be kind of an interesting question, because it would take some time to get processed and get on the stip and then to get approved and get built. But yes, it could happen.
Okay. And with regard to the accessory dwellings unit conversation, what did the council do to change how accessory buildings are approved?
So you basically, the simple version of this is you have kind of a small and a larger size accessory dwelling units, and there's some limitations on the numbers. And what we are finding is that if you look at them in separation, kind of a simple way to explain this, but you know, if you have like a small building, like the example last night was a gentleman has He's got like a feeding barn for his horses, which is really small. It's just, what are those called? Like a lofting shed, I think, where, you get the hay in there and they can go in and the horses can feed. And then he's got a small area where it's like a greenhouse. Well, those are accessory buildings. So that hits his limit. And so by numbers, he could not add another building to it. So he would have to take down buildings or combine buildings to stay within the physical number. And what we really did is we switched to a square footage model so that he could say, oh, okay, well, these things are very small. Like, I don't think many people are going to think of the greenhouse as this big accessory unit, or at least that's not what the intent was back in the day. So now what you can do is, based on your square footage, you can build another barn, which is what he's looking to do for equipment.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, I'm sorry if I didn't explain those very well, but if you get a question on it, if I didn't make sense to someone, just email us at the county council email on the website, and I'll get your response right away.
Okay, Candace, thanks.
All right, thanks, Austin.
Candace Hart serves as chair of the Summit County Council. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Park City Mayor Ryan Dickey is 100 days into the job. He joins me now in the studio with an update of his administration's progress so far. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, so reflections on your 100-day plan was published in the Park Record this week. So is there an actual plan? And if so, where can we find it?
For the city, we have a lot of plans. We're going to go into our retreat in May, so you'll see the council. We kicked out a couple extra months from the typical February timeframe because we wanted our new city manager to be involved. So there, I think you'll see the council step back a little bit and talk about sort of big picture planning. But for us, I think with the council and me, we came into this first 100 days off the campaign, seeing that the feeling that there's a bunch of projects that are sort of really close, that the council was having trouble like just pushing over the line. And that's a lot of the things we've done in the first 100 days that I'm proud of, that I wrote about, that the council really leaned in and took some votes on.
Okay, because I specifically remember Nan Worrell having a plan, that she sent out, but
well,
that's not the case.
No, you'll remember, I studiously avoided 100 days when last time I was on with you, but I couldn't avoid making some commitments. But no, we had amazingly full agendas for a new council of things that we knew were teed up right away to tackle.
Okay, well, let's just talk about some of those things that you say you're proud of. We've got a new city manager, of course. Adam Leonard was hired. You say you got it right hiring him, and he's already improving how City Hall operates day to day. How so? He doesn't even know who the staff is.
I mean, well, Adam jumped right into to our meetings, to our budgeting process. I've been going through with Adam, having meetings through the city, and he's just a really impressive guy. Every meeting we have, yesterday we met with police, a couple of days before that met with water, asking really smart questions. He's just sort of your consummate pro manager, and I'm already seeing that bubbling up in the budgeting process and in sort of the cultural stuff that I'm really interested in moving at the city. I think Adam's just really in step with that. So you can just see the impact, I think, of the new council, of the new manager, that there is just an excitement and a sort of a positive energy in the city that I think we've been missing over the last couple of years. It's a slow battleship to turn, right? It's a big organization. We've got over 400 employees. But I think if you ask around in the building, you'll feel a difference.
Yeah, so there's a kind of an emotional thing as opposed to he's managing 400 people. So things in terms of the way the office runs really haven't changed, or the departments.
He's just on board. So not in a concrete sense, but you can see the seeds of that being planted, I think, in a pretty concrete way.
All right. In your reflections, you say that you and the council have strengthened alignment at City Hall, creating a more focused and collaborative approach to decision making. So what does that mean?
Well, I think, I don't know what you're reading there, but I think we are, if you want to talk about sort of the way we work with staff, I think I've seen our staff being willing more to lean in sort of in our meetings at the dais. I think I really saw staff sort of drawing back over the last couple of years, being a little bit less willing to take risks and sort of dig in with opinions. I think staff had felt beaten up a little bit by previous councils and was sort of you know, doing a little more order taking than, hey, here's an opportunity, here's something you haven't thought of, we should be pushed back on. I mean, the council, we're not professionals. These are part-time jobs for us. If we come in hot and we're saying unanimously, we want to do something, and staff members who work in these areas and are doing this day to day are saying, hey, you're missing something, I want them to feel comfortable saying, you know, I hear you, you're in charge, you're the policymakers, but please make sure you're considering this, you know, item in your decision. I'm just seeing the seeds of that with our staff being more comfortable to work with us, and sort of just that's just a business-like sort of professional way that people work together in a workplace.
All right, so maybe an opportunity for staff to kind of think outside the box and
I
not
hope
be afraid
so.
to mention it.
Bring us opportunities, you know, being a little bit less reactive to us.
All right. On transportation, the council directed development of new park and ride facility at the Gordo property and that 22-acre city-owned parcel along SR 248. This gets done with financial support from Deer Valley Resort. So with the news that Deer Valley isn't moving forward on its snow park redevelopment this year, what does that mean for the funding that the resort's pledged? Does the city get that up front to move forward with this project?
Yeah, so there's the funding will come from, we look at that Deer Valley contribution as seed money. So this won't get done, that, you know, we have a big project, this Recreate 248, which is super shorthand, this is the BRT and the park and ride. That's a much bigger project than the $30 million in seed that is Deer Valley and the city match. So we're gonna go to FTA, we're gonna go to UDOT. It's a bigger project than that. But having that seed money is what's gonna allow us, we think, to, with the Olympics, sort of jump the line, get prioritized for things we want to do. We saw that in D.C. when we went and met with our federal delegation, that when you talk about a $30 million seed money, it's like, oh, that's a big deal. It's a big deal with FTA. You're not just coming with an empty cup and saying, we really want nice things. So that's the seed. The $15 million is related really to the right-of-way. We see that this transportation partnership is going to be there. I think regardless of the development timeline, I think that development will happen. That's obviously been delayed, but the equipment from Deer Valley is there to move forward on the transportation piece earlier than they break ground.
All right. As you mentioned, the council also chose dedicated side-running bus lanes, BRT lanes, as its preferred solution for the 248 corridor. Both UDOT and many in the community seem to prefer the flex lanes. So why did you push these added transit lanes?
So the flex lanes, the challenge with flex lanes is that you sort of just move the traffic bottleneck into town. So you, on the way in, yes, you can get cars faster through Quinns, and then they just sort of pile up when you get to Bonanza. It just doesn't really address the traffic problem as much as move the bottleneck. It's extremely attractive when you're driving on that road. We've all had the thought, like, why are we not just reversing this center lane? And there is an opportunity to do that in the, you know, in the future if that's something that makes sense. But really, the solution is two-way, in two directions, side-running bus lanes, rapid transit, goes up Bonanza, goes up Deer Valley Drive to our transit center. That's what every study, every expert that talked to us, our team said, this is what makes sense for the future.
Yeah, so we have room on Bonanza for BRT lanes? Or is that being closed to regular traffic?
It won't be closed to regular traffic. We will need some additional, there'll be more space. You'll have that widen Bonanza. But the good thing about Bonanza specifically versus Kearns and 248 is a UDOT road. It has to comply with state standards, wider lanes. I mean, we see it today. Bonanza's a city road, so we really just need to widen the lanes to just accommodate the width of the bus. They can be narrow. We have places to work with you on the 5 acres that that project is planned to accommodate the bus lanes on that side of the street, pending some, you know, intersection study. We have some property to work with. We're just entering into design, so we haven't gotten into which property, where does the right-of-way go, but we do need a little more space.
Yeah, I mean, really, do you have that on Bonanza? Have you done the engineering study? Because, of course, we got the creek on the west side, and then we've got the mountain on the, you know, the east side.
I think there's geography, there's land to work with, but there is private land. So, no, we haven't done the engineering study. That's what we're doing in design.
Now, because of these increased transit lanes along 248 and it being a state road, will we need to see walls go up along at least the Prospector side of things, like what was required on Interstate 80 when we saw the one lane of traffic added, the uphill climbing lane there near Jeremy?
I don't I don't think so. We haven't talked about that need at all. But, you know, when we get into design, that's when you address issues like that. But, you know, we have quite a bit of right-of-way today. We have that center lane. I don't think the widening is something that is going to feel like 220, what's happening on 224, for example, because of what we already have. But I don't want to jump ahead of design. For sure, you do need a little bit of width. That was clear in the report. But we have a lot to work with already.
Yeah, as I recall with the wall along I-80, I mean, it was something that was put out to the residents, and it was like they're the ones who determined whether or not that wall went up or not. So I don't know that it's the city's decision.
Well, that was a UDOT. Yeah, that's a UDOT process for sound walls, and this would be a UDOT city, you know, project.
All right, looking to the Bonanza Park 5-acre site, you say the city plans to use less than half of the site's developable area, about 100,000 square foot feet fewer than a previously proposed private development. So I'm questioning, what development are we referring to? Are we talking about Mark Fisher's plans that the city didn't like, and then we purchased the property promising to build to the zone, which has now been changed, which allows less parking and more density? Or are we talking about the Kimball Arts Center and Sundance plan? I mean, where are we subtracting from?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Mark Fisher plan. So going back to, why did the city acquire this property in the first place, which is, you know, before my time, but that 5 acres was filled with dense nightly rental and commercial development that our residents didn't want. So the city purchased the property. Then we moved into, you know, what are we doing with it? The Arts and Culture District, all the various iterations. But it started as a project to eliminate all this nightly rental density from that corner. And so what I'm referring to there is it's 100,000 square foot larger than what was proposed and would, you know, we think would have been allowed in that zone. So for all the talk of density, we've removed a lot of density from what would have been at that corner.
So the application is before the Planning Commission. What about what's kind of a groundswell happening with community support to keep the acreages open space, or maybe allowing a community amphitheater, maybe a few artists in residence, cabanas or something like that? Instead, we're advocating a dense multi-story development.
Yeah, well, we've heard that feedback. There's the arts community. There was a group that wants a park. There's a big group that loves what's before the city. And it sort of goes back to what I've always said about this site, which is there's a bunch of great things you could do with it. You could do all those things with it. No one's ever sorry you built a park. There's great commercial development. There's housing. There's this awesome 2-acre community space that is in the current proposal. Eventually, you got to pick one. And you got to go do something, because what's there is an eyesore, and it's sort of an embarrassment of, you know, 9 years now to the inaction of government. And so what our council did a few weeks ago is we picked one and we moved it forward to the Planning Commission. And you can't, a planning process in the past that tried to solve every city priority on 5 acres failed because that's impossible. And so I think what the council has put together is a great start. There's a bunch of great community uses. There's a bunch of great arts uses. There's awesome community spaces. There's housing. It's going to go to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission is going to look at the design and the physical form of it. And then we're going to negotiate a development agreement with the developer. And that's where we'll dial in uses and spaces and the sizes of the commercial and what exactly are these arts uses that we've approved and how exactly does the plaza function. So we're not done taking feedback, but we made a decision. I think that's really important.
Yeah, so with the widening of Bonanza that we're talking about with the BRT lanes, is that going to help adding the housing there? Again, it's probably the busiest intersection in town.
Building affordable housing with a BRT stop attached to it, you couldn't really ask for anything better from a housing and transit perspective. So absolutely. And we also get to use our own city land to accommodate any widening that we would need instead of going across the street where you have really tight setbacks. So all good things.
Yeah. Let's move on to Olympic planning. I'm like, how much Olympic planning really is needed? I mean, we spent taxpayer dollars to send you and some council members to Europe. But all along, the bid committee has touted how Utah could hold the games tomorrow. So I guess, why are we sending people away when, you know, we've got 8 years to plan?
Well, to plan, I think we want to get smart about the Olympics. So I would hate to think there's an Olympics going on, an invitation from the IOC to observe it and help plan that we said no thanks to. So I'm really glad we went, and we learned a lot. So you start off with where we are, you know, 8 years away from the Games. We're in a timeline that's before we were even awarded the 2002 Games. It's a lot about imagination and how do we want to do the Olympics different. What's changed since 2002? You know, a lot's changed. The Olympics are much bigger. There's a lot more events. There's a lot more competition around us for people who would like to have events that we had here in 2002. So it's important that we have a seat at the table. It's important that we work with the IOC and with Utah 2034 on the Games. So I think we could, you know, in a sense, we could host the Games tomorrow because we host big events really successfully all the time. But we're also not trying to host the same Games that we so, you know, could just rinse and repeat from 2002. We want every Games to be better than the last one. We want this one to be the best Games ever. So that's what we're up to.
All right. You took one of the vacancies off of the Planning Commission for the public to apply for and returned Adam Strong to the Planning Commission. What made him the right choice? I mean, given his past work representing both Park City Mountain and Deer Valley Resorts, he's likely going to have to recuse himself from some major resort-related decisions at both resort bases.
Yeah, well, in a small town, you know, people have conflicts. There's always conflicts in the Planning Commission, and we have a policy to cover that, and folks are responsible to recuse themselves when necessary. But there's a lot before the Planning Commission. We're losing a very experienced commissioner in Bill Johnson, who we're sorry to lose. And then we have two seats to fill this summer who could, you're looking at potentially a lot of new people. And I looked at the opportunity to fill the term of someone really experienced by bringing in someone who also has deep experience. I think Adam Strawn was a phenomenal planning commissioner. He served for, I think, 10 years. He was the chair of the Planning Commission. We had just appointed him, and he'd served for the last 2 years on our appeals panel, right up until the end of last year, which hears appeals of Planning Commission decisions. So literally doing the same work of the Planning Commission and actually, you know, having the opportunity to overturn their decisions. So there haven't been conflicts, concerns for Adam over the course of, I think, four different mayors and councils who have appointed him to make regulatory decisions on land use. I didn't have those concerns either. I just wanted someone who could jump in and start contributing right away.
Mm-hmm. So will he, I mean, ethically, is he allowed to even take part in the discussions with the two new chairlifts at Park City? There are before the Planning Commission?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know exactly what Adam's work is, and Adam will have to manage his conflict, and I'll work with our city attorney just like any other, just like with any other conflict on the Planning Commission. I know over his 12 years of service on land use boards for the city, I'm sure that resort projects have come through and he's already had to deal with that.
All right. And I want to jump back to your first meeting as the mayor and the council voted to appoint Molly Miller as your replacement on the city council since you were elected to mayor. A lot of pushback on that as you only won the election, as we know, by 7 votes. And those who voted for Jack Rubin would have liked to have seen their candidate on the council's. You know, sure, it's the council's choice and your recommendation, but you say we needed a prospector representative. A lot of people are just saying, no, it was just a way to push your agenda. How do you respond to that?
You know, my job as mayor and in making that appointment for advice and consent is to put together a team that can get things done for Park City. And so when I looked at that spot, it was who is going to be the right member for this team that'll complement the council and be able to get things done. So my agenda, I guess, sounds a little, darker than they would have it. But my agenda is my agenda for the city and for moving things forward in the agenda of the council. So, our system of elections is set up to, such that the winner goes to the spoils, right? We want functional government. We don't have anything in code that says the last place finisher or the closest gets the job for a reason. We want functional government with a coherent agenda to get things done. I looked at Molly as the right person to do that. And when I look at what's happened over this first 100 days and this council that's worked together, it's not been a bunch of unanimous votes, not at all. But they've coalesced and actually taken difficult votes and moved things forward. I think it validates the decision, and that's certainly no stain on shot at Jack, or who's a really smart guy and I'm sure could have done a great job. But I made the right pick for our council, and I think it's worked out.
Yeah. Were you afraid that Jack was going to prevent or stall your work that you wanted to get done?
You know, I don't think it's so much fear about Jack, but you're looking for someone who you think is going to be aligned with the council and filling some gaps and will take votes to move things forward. You know, Jack and I had different points of view on lots of things. That's why you have elections. And so certainly I did want someone who I felt like was in step with my values and the things I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and I also want to jump back to the fact that on that first meeting, the council allowed Matthew Prince to move forward with his Old Town mansion. I mean, critics say that that vote signaled a willingness to support high-end development in sensitive areas. I guess, what does that vote, though, signify to other billionaires? I mean, as well as the state legislature, who certainly tried to weigh in on the issue. I mean, that the city gives up because lawsuits are involved and it just costs too much money, so go ahead.
I don't know what it signals to anybody. I hope what it signals is that the council stepped in and said, when a development meets the code, as determined by our planning commission and by our planning director, who is no slouch, it's certainly not easy to get through that design review process, and you've fought to get a house that complies with our code, which the city did, which I did, which we stood up to legislative attempts for legislative interference over 4 years. But when it gets there, you can't just say, well, I don't like where we started. I don't like the applicant or how much money somebody has. We're going to follow the law. And I think that's what the council did. And I'm proud of them for that. That's a really hard vote. No one in the community called and said, hey, you know, great job approving that big house on a hill over Old Town. That is the council saying we just have to do the right thing. It's right, certainly to prevent us from more legislative interference, but it also meets the code. And so I was proud of some new council members who had to lean in and take that vote because nobody congratulated or thanked us for it.
Okay, finally, looking ahead, what are your top priorities then for the next 6 months?
Well, I'll tell you, we talked about what we've accomplished over the last 100 days, and that's taking big, meaningful steps on a lot of things. But none of that stuff is done. And so we got to continue to see this stuff forward. It only gets harder as you get to the end where things are really happening. So I'm eager to focus on the things we have moving forward. I think you'll see probably, Main Street come forward in some form or fashion. We have a council that had a big agenda put in front of it by sort of things that were left behind from other councils. It's going to want to assert itself. And, my job as the mayor without a vote is to, help this council achieve its vision. And so that's what we're going to be working on for the rest of the year.
Okay. That retreat's happening when?
In May something. I'll get you that date.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, just excited. I'm really proud of this council for the work it's done over the last 100 days. Like, truly excited to be in the job and just looking forward to it. Looking forward to the rest.
All right, Ryan, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Park City Mayor Ryan Dickey. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. On the phone now with an update from the Heber Valley Chamber, it's Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner. Good morning, Jessica. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's quickly just note that we've got the upcoming Wasatch Back Economic Summit, and tickets are on sale?
Yes, tickets are on sale now. That's going to be held Monday, May 11th. It is a full-day summit event. It will be held again at Grand Hyatt Deer Valley, which is a nice central location between Wasatch and Summit County along the Wasatch Back. The focus of the summit this year is really going to be about adapting to change and building resilience. We will have some keynote speakers for breakfast and lunch. We're going to structure it similar to last year in that it's going to be really education focused the first half of the day, and then implementation and discussion for key tactics the second half of the day, with a closing mixer for anyone that would like to stick around. So again, full day about 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the new Grand Hyatt.
Okay, this is a big conference room, but I think we came close to selling out last year.
We had nearly 400 ticket sales last year or tickets that were either sponsor and sold. We are looking to hit that same number this year. Ticket sales are looking strong, but yeah, I would suggest if anyone's debating on whether or not to go, I wouldn't wait, because once we do sell out, it'll go to a wait list after that.
Okay. And people can find that at GoHeberValley.com or
GoHeberValley.com, and also the Park City Chamber. It is a co-sponsored event.
Sure. All right, let's talk about some of the upcoming events. What are you excited about?
Sure. Yeah, so covering off on a couple that are more chamber and local business related, the Spring Tourism Partner Roundtable. Now, we typically hold one in the spring and one in the fall. It gives our office and tourism team an opportunity to share some of the media and marketing plans that are coming up for the next coming season. So in this case, we'll be talking about our summer and fall marketing plan. We're also going to, the second half of that roundtable discussion, we're going to introduce a team that we've hired, a third-party team that's going to help with some destination development plans. Now, we already have a destination development plan in place for the tourism side of our office, tourism and economic development, but it is always good to refresh those, revisit those, and refresh those. So we're taking a concerted effort, working with a very quality and qualified partner to bring about that destination plan and take a look at where do we want to be in the next 10 plus years. So that will open up the table to discussion with anyone that would like to join us. That roundtable will take place at Soldier Hollow on May 7th, and it is a morning meeting at night, starting at 9 a.m. and going for about 90 minutes. So anyone that is considers themselves to be in the tourism industry in the Wasatch County and surrounding areas, we encourage you to RSVP in advance so we can just get a good head count and show up that day.
Okay. You've also got a chamber mixer coming up.
We do. Yeah. Our next chamber mixer, we just had one earlier this week. It was excellent. It held at Guild Mortgage. The next one will be May 14th. Now, those are always in the afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., trying to capture people as they're leaving work or ending their work day. Spruce Personalized Decor, owned by Jen Mangum, who is over just off Midway Main Street, will be hosting this mixer. She's actually a very well very well-known business owner. She owns Spruce. She owns Kringle's just across the street, same side, but across the street, which is the year-round Christmas store. She also owns all of the buildings behind her and has opened up some micro business space in those areas to allow small business owners and entrepreneurs to just get a kickstart on their business plans. So again, May 14th, 4 to 6 p.m., please join us. It is free. We just ask that you RSVP in advance so we can get a head count for food and beverage.
Okay. And then you've got your monthly chamber luncheon coming up the following week.
Sure do. Yeah, we do these every other month. We started that last year to kind of offset some of the other programming that our chamber offers. So the next chamber luncheon will be May 19th from 12 to 1:30. That is going to be held at the Wasatch Back, the UVU Wasatch campus. That is just on the north end of Heber City there. So register in advance for that. There is a small fee just to help us cover some of the costs associated with hosting that lunch. And we would really love to see people show up for that.
All right. An exciting event coming to the Wasatch County Event Center. Barrel racing?
Barrel racing. You know, we do a lot of horse equestrian enthusiasts and rodeo-related events over at the outdoor rodeo grounds and the indoor event center arena. We do host barrel racing twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. So this weekend, we'll be featuring the Utah Barrel Racing Competitions, and that is the 17th through the 19th. So tomorrow, throughout the weekend, please show up if you're interested in that. It is an excellent event to see some of the finest at that competition.
Okay, and then Wasatch Mountain State Parks hosting a dark sky celebration.
Yes. Yep, this is an annual event that the Wasatch Mountain State Park hosts every year in April, with it being a Dark Sky Awareness Month. So this celebration will take place over at the Visitor Center, where you would park in and head in for that. It is from 7 to 10 p.m. It does include telescopes that will be provided for free, as well as guided night sky viewing. So if you're curious about the stars and you know, galactic events above, this is a great event to support the state park, understand the dark skies and the preservation efforts that are in place now and more to come as we move forward. Of course, Jordandale State Park being a dark skies designated location and well-known, Wasatch Mountain State Park working slowly toward a similar designation. But this event is really well done, so I encourage everyone to come out.
Okay, and just the last minute we have, why don't you run through what else you've got on the calendar?
Yeah, certainly. You know, the Mad Hatter Tea is being held at Homestead. It's great for adults or kids. They do it every Saturday in April. So you've got this Saturday and April 25th. It's 10 to 1. They do those in the globes that they've installed on site. The Dainty Pear has some excellent community programming, and their classes tend to fill and sell out quickly, and they keep those classes small intentionally. The next class will be floral arranging on April 23rd, and then following that, they'll have a guided painting, oil painting class. Kohler Creamery does their cheese making classes every month. So the next one will be April 24th coming up, and that's a burrata or a mozzarella. They offer both classes. The Park City Wine Club does tastings across the Wasatch Back. Their next one will be held at the Market at Midway, and that's April 24th from 6 to 7:30. Please do register for any and all of these events in advance. The Heber Valley Railroad is bringing back their Princess and Pirate train. They've had a couple already this year. The next one will be April 25th at 1 p.m. Those tend to sell out early, so if you can't get in on that date, just check their other availability on their calendar. And then Folklore Bookshop, which is a new bookshop over in Midway, they recently celebrated their one-year anniversary. They had a author book signing earlier this week that I attended. It was wall-to-wall people, so really, really well supported. The next one will be April 22nd at 2 p.m. Shea McGee will be there, and she recently published her book, Around the Table. So just a smattering of events. Of course, all of this and more available on our website at GoHeberValley.com.
Okay, Jessica, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jessica is Public Relations Manager with Heber Valley Chamber, GoHeberValley.org. Hey, a reminder that in 15 minutes, the 2026 statewide Utah Shakeout is happening. This is when Utahns participate in earthquake drills at work, school, or home. You can find out more by going online to shakeout.org/Utah. And again, some 920,000 participants already registered. I don't think we did here at KPCW. So again, never too late, because they always say it's not if, but when the big one's coming. It's KPCW Park City.